Welcome back to In the Moment. As a comedian and actor, Cheech Marin has made people laugh for decades, especially fans of pop culture and counterculture. But he also has compiled the largest personal collection of art celebrating Mexican-American heritage in the United States. Marin was a guest lecturer at the University of North Dakota Thursday, mostly to visit about his collection and about his advocacy for minority artists. Prior to the speaking event, he visited with Prairie Public's Ashley Thornburg.
I want to start just with the term Chicano because it is not something that is agreed upon, really, what that means, or even if it's a positive term. So I want to know what Chicano means to you.
Well, that's the essence. You haven't hit the essence of the question, first thing. Chicano is a term that was originally used by Mexicans to other Mexicans as an insult. And the concept being that the Mexicans or Mexicanos that were living in the United States, not in Mexico anymore, were somehow less than Mexicans because they had left their country and they were some, they were little satellite Mexicans. They were Chicos, small, so they were Chicanos, you know, little kind of faux Mexicans. And it was an insult. But depending on where you lived in relation to the border, the farther away you got from the border, it was less of an insult because you grew up being other. And it really means other because it's not an official designation. You can't go to the census and tick off a box that says Chicano because it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But you can get a PhD in Chicano studies from Harvard University. So what's the message? We exist, we don't exist. It's a voluntary category. You have to say you're a Chicano in order to be a Chicano. But the definition of the term is evolving as we speak because now it includes Central Americans, South Americans, other Mexicans because of the migratory habits, and they picked up according to the art and then displayed it. So that's what a Chicano is. It's a little tiny micro-Mexican.
Well, I imagine then using that term as a sense, there is a place for it where it is a sense of pain, it is a sense of belonging, it's a sense of purpose, identity, wonder, really informs the art that is behind it. So when it comes to you and collecting Chicano art, is it anybody who qualifies themselves as Chicano, or what is your criteria for what you want to collect?
Originally, it was the artistic arm of the Chicano civil rights movement in the late 60s. And they were coming, they were trying to establish their identity because when you grow up Mexican-based or anything like that in the United States, you're called Mexican. And I was like, yo, Mexican. And I lived in an all-black neighborhood. Yo, Mexican. And so at one point, I was being chased down an alley by a bunch of black guys. Yo, Mexican, come back here. And I, wait a minute, I'm not Mexican. I've never been to Mexico. I don't speak Spanish. And so we had this dialogue. Why are you African American? You ever been to Africa? No. We had this discussion. And so it is a voluntary category. So the definition of it evolved awareness of what that situation was. Mm-hmm. My dad, who lived to be 93, grew up calling himself Chicano because that identified him, you know. And when I first heard the term Chicano, because I wasn't Mexican. I didn't like hyphenated terms like Mexican-American or Italian-American. I said, you're American or you're not, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I heard the term Chicano, that identified me. This is who I am, and so it was a badge of pride and an emblem of honor, you know. So there was a whole generation of young Chicanos who grew up identifying with that and saying, "This is who we are, and this is what we represent."
Mm-hmm. So, how is that represented in your art collection?
Well, it evolves. If you go to the lecture night, you see where the roots of it, where it started as a political movement. And it was the visual arm of the political movement. Then after that was established and how these artists kind of had their own artistic vision of what. And the Chicano School of Painting or Chicano School of Art is not a stylistic school. It's not like Impressionism or Expressionism. Mm-hmm. It is a description of this community by a bunch of different viewpoints. And when you put all these viewpoints together, you get the 360 of what this community looks like. You don't get the picture, you get the flavor of it. It's called the sabor. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the taste and this flavor, and it comes, and it's a gestalt that enters it really. Excuse me, Kazuntai too.
You don't speak Spanish, but you'll throw that out
yeah,
there?
Yeah, baby. At this point, I do.
Okay.
You know, it's not a hard thing to do. My wife is Russian, and she speaks fluent Spanish. And she learned it in 3 months. I saw her do it. Oh, geez, make you feel like such a dummy. And but you know, and then you know, we're just coming out of a period where that Chicano identification was lost because there was no political movement or incentive to kind of push it along. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to rediscover it because there is value and benefit in establishing yourself as a Chicano. And it waxes and wanes as we go through history.
You got interested in collecting art through a former wife. Did it come immediately, or was it sort of a slow growth for you?
No, yeah, I was interested in art from a very early age. I was an anomaly. My cousins and I were anomalies. We were these blue-collar Chicano kids whose my father was a policeman. My uncles were upholsterers, but they had these kids, us, that were high-achieving academics. And we banded together in this little group to kind of pursue that, and we pushed each other. And so this little group, the head cousin, Louis, there's always a head cousin.
Does that come with a name badge?
Yeah, exactly. It comes with a whip. and he assigned us topics. Okay, Regine, my other cousin, Regine Castro, my cousin, was the first Chicano studies PhD from Harvard. The very first, you know, and he was an artist, and he was assigned Middle Ages. You learn about the Middle Ages, and then Cheech, you learn about art and bring that information back to the group. And so that's what, okay, well, how do you do that? And so I went to the library.
Okay.
I took out all the art books, mm-hmm. one by one, as many as they would let me take out. And I would sit there and look at the pictures. Okay, that's Cezanne. Okay, that's Picasso, okay, you know, or Rembrandt, or Franz mm-hmm. Hals, or the whole history of art. That's how I learned them. So my education was up to kind of modern art, and I didn't know anything about contemporary art. So that was a gap in my knowledge. So mm-hmm. I started to go. I was married to a painter at the time. She started taking me to galleries in the west side of L.A., and that's where I discovered these Chicano painters.
Mm-hmm.
And these painters are really good, because I knew what good painting was mm-hmm. because I had seen it all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go to see paintings live. You have to see them live because it's a whole different thing. The quality of paint emerges mm-hmm. when you see them live. And so I started learning. I said, well, these guys are great, you know. Wow. So I started collecting them. And once you collect one Chicano painter, you collect 1,000 because they find out that you're buying art. You know, there's fresh meat over here. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm an inveterate collector, and I collect baseball cards, marbles, bottle
mm-hmm.
caps, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I started collecting Chicano art, and then one thing led to another, and here we are today.
How do you walk through a painting when you see it? What stands out to you?
The totality of the experience, you know, you can educate yourself as much as you want and have all these terms and identifications and knowledge and blah, 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 blah. But the essential quality is when you stand and you educate yourself and you stand in front of a pen, you go, wow, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound primitive, but it's highly informed by all the knowledge you have gathered. But I take it in all at once. Oh, this is, you know, you see it's like it's a tune. You don't go, oh, that's a great bass line, or that's a good lead guitar,
mm-hmm.
or the drum pedal is really good. You know, you hear this band, well, that's a cool sound. And that's how we do it.
Mm.
It's magic.
Does your collection, I mean, when it comes to Chicano art, there are several movements, and like you said, there's not a style
uh-huh.
that means exclusively uh-huh. Chicano.
Uh-huh.
Some argue that it should go back to Mexico's indigenous past. Some argue that it should be brought into the present time. Some argue that there should be the conflict with the colonialism and the indigenous. Do you draw any of those distinctions?
Nah. No, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Chicano is where traditional Mexican artistic influence meets American pop
mm-hmm.
and mashes together, because it's an American school of art. Chicano art is American art.
Mm-hmm.
And it enters into the discussion as like, well, are Chicanos or Mexicans part of the American fabric? Of course they are. And you're never going to unweave that, nor should you, or nor should you want to, mm-hmm. you know, because it's a huge part of our population. I was just in Topeka, Kansas a little while ago, and there's more Mexican restaurants in Topeka, Kansas than there are McDonald's.
Well.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's a lava flow.
Yeah.
You know, you can stand in front of it. I just wouldn't recommend it.
You obviously very famous before you were known for being an art collector.
Yeah, yeah.
And the comedy, very counterculture, very influenced by smoking a lot of pot. Did you have trouble getting accepted in the art world? Were you taken seriously when you said, I am a collector?
Oh, yeah. I just had so much resistance from the Chicano community, the academics, because the concept was, it's like, who is this stoner going to come in and tell us what's up with Chicano art? You know, we went to, you know, went to universities, got a PhD, worked hard, and I entered in their field without kind of the proper gravitas or educational background or information. And they were kind of like, they didn't know I was coming in. I was an opportunist or a carpetbagger or whatever there, you know. And then that wasn't my intention at all, you know. My intention was to share this art with the people, and it changed right as soon as they start opening the crates in the first museum, and they start taking out the paintings. Oh, you know, because they didn't know who I was vis-a-vis the art deal. So then we started doing that, and then all of a sudden it changed, like immediately, because the first show I ever did was in San Antonio, Texas, and that was the center of Chicano academia, right there, and so they were all, you know. And then it changed. I said, you know, they saw my intentions. I come bearing gifts free, you know. Oh, okay, free. We like that.
When you started collecting, did you have legacy in mind or just passion?
At first, you just wanted something green to go over the couch. You know, you got any green art here? You know, like, you know, really, I'm really, truly, that was it. Yeah. And so, but very quickly, yeah. I realized that this is an untapped field, and I have my pick of any masterpieces of Chicano art because they were still out there ready to be collected. Very quickly, I realized that because I started collecting a lot, I was a perfect storm. I knew what the art was. I had money to collect it because I was gainfully employed all those years. Mm-hmm. And then I had celebrity in order to promote it. That's what I started doing.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly I realized that, hey, because my friends in the art community started telling me, you got to show this. You got to show this. You have a big enough collection. You got to show this. Okay, so I started buying big, big art. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, paintings that were 25 feet long and 12 feet high. You're not going to put those over the couch unless you've got the world's biggest couch, you know? And so I started, I'm going to do a show here, and I'm going to do these immense representational paintings. And so I had that in my mind when I started buying art. This tells this part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it proceeded.
A lot of Americans, when they hear Mexican-inspired art or Mexican art, mm-hmm. don't get much past Day of the Dead celebrations, don't get much past mm-hmm. Frida Kahlo or Diego Rivera. Who else should we know?
God, there's so many. I mean,
if you could only pick three.
If I could only pick three. You should know Carlos Almaraz, who was the instigator of the school of Chicano art, and currently has his very first big retrospective at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, and it's a spectacular, spectacular show. Mm-hmm. Any of the Los Four, Frank Romero, Magoo, Patsy Valdez, Gronk, all that, I mean, there's a zillion of them, and really, it keeps regenerating, you know, and every kind of half a generation, there's a new thing, new group of painters that come in that, mm-hmm. and they all have the kind of same pattern, not all of them, but most of them have the same pattern, is they give you news from the front. They report on the condition of the community and how they see it, and then they go off into their own artistic concerns, whatever that is. But there's still some sort of social identification
mm-hmm.
in all Chicano art, and that's what I look for first. How is this Chicano? How are these two parallel lines Chicano? And if they're not, then they're just, you know, parallel lines.
Well, and quite a bit of it is done in murals, not something that's going to end up in a private collection.
There is a lot of mural thing, but that's a section of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like saying all Chicanos are left-handed pitchers. You know, there's left-handed, there's right-handers, they're not pitchers, they're catchers, they're, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that correction.
Thank you very much.
I want to go back to Cheech and Chong.
Okay, me too.
Comedy is very much influenced by the time and place and everything that is going on when it is released into the world. Does Cheech and Chong hold up today?
You know, more than ever. I just am flabbergasted by the longevity of our career and the longevity of our connection with the community and how it's changed. You know, we stay, at some point we knew because we were the other side were like, well, you're promoting marijuana, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, you know, we kept saying, well, you know, marijuana has other properties besides getting you high, has a lot of medicinal. Who's laughing now, dude? You know, I have not heard an argument for medical beer so far, but I have heard a lot of applications of medical marijuana. You know, mm-hmm. And as the baby boomers get older, they're already old, but as they get older, they, myself as an application, you kind of, you know, arthritis, acid reflux, and it's absolutely the best prescription for that. I'll give you an example. I was just talking about 2 days ago, I was in Los Angeles, and I was approached by the Secretary of State of California to do a PSA for the instructions of how to apply for a marijuana license. In California.
I wonder why they thought of you.
Yeah, because I'm legal now. Isn't that amazing?
Did you think it would be legal when you were, when it was counterculture?
I thought it would be officially legal at some point. It was already legal in my community. Everybody that I knew, you know, what, I'm just smoking weed, what, you know. But my father's a policeman. You know, so I knew exactly the distinctions in the law and who would have, and I watched them how they approached it, the police department, and it became less and less and less of a concern every year, you know.
Are you watching any comedians working today?
I don't specifically go out to see them, you know, because I'm on in the other stuff. But if there's something funny happens, I'm a fan of comedy, and I was growing up. I was a comedy nerd, and I was everything that was anybody that was on Ed Sullivan's show or any had TV, Red Skelton, Desi Arnaz, Lucy, all those. You know,
mm-hmm. You seem to be a nerd about a lot of things. Who keeps pulling that thread just to see where it goes.
Yeah, you know, it is really, because I was raised in a Catholic education, mm-hmm. Catholic in both senses of the term, the religious sense, but the universality of Catholic education. And so that's what I was taught, to try to find out a little about everything. And, you know, the line in the Catholic educational system was, Catholic education teaches you how to think, just don't think that. Okay, well, there seems to be a contradiction here, Father, mm-hmm. You know, and so, but I used that as, and all of my cousins were all Catholic educated, and we were interested in everything, really interested in, you know, astronomy and architecture and music, and, you know, and so we investigated all those things.
The mediums that you most express yourself with, the comedy, mm-hmm. the arts, mm-hmm. pursuing many of these passions, you talked about this being a movement in mm-hmm. the 60s for civil rights, mm-hmm. and music and art very much influence and are telling the sort of hidden stories. Mm-hmm. What stories are you most focused on today as still need to be highlighted?
The integration of that aesthetic into the mainstream, the recognition of that aesthetic in the mainstream, not the insertion, because it's already there. It's the acceptance and the recognition of this and how it is a part of the American fabric, mm-hmm. you know. And I grew up thinking that the American dream absolutely applied to me. I never doubted. Okay, you know, you get educated, and it, you know, proved to be true. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of resistance in some quarters from there, but it's I don't understand why. We don't want like indoor plumbing or electricity. You know, I mean, really, that's what it is. But it's just really good for you. You know, we don't. It's like not liking tortillas. Well, okay, but, you know, how are you going to make a taco? You know, and it is that acceptance of that, because the narrative is told from a very specific point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, because the first European language spoken in the United States, or what America, was Spanish. And 100 years later, the English came, and then the French. And you want to kind of put that in the mix. And I'll give you an example. There is no more American thing that you can do than sit in front of your giant big screen TV watching the Super Bowl, eating guacamole with Dorito chips and drinking a Corona. That's quintessentially American. And how do you say, isn't that right? You separate it. How do you separate that out, you know? And it's accepted, and it's a gradual acceptance. There's resistance in some places. No, this is good for you. Mm-hmm. You know, this is good for you and your children and the country. And people are getting that. You know, people are getting that. So it's cool.
Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
That's Prairie Public's Ashley Thornburg. She was talking with comedian, actor, art collector Cheech Marin. He was at the University of North Dakota on Thursday.